The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised. Chubbs on film. Chubbs on film. Chubbs on film. Chubbs on film.
Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur, your host, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Jahan and Isaac. Bond 25 is set for a spring 2020 release with Daniel Craig once again playing the British secret agent James Bond for the fifth and final time. In this present era of Me Too, will this new Bond film build a bridge from the character's legacy as a quote-unquote misogynistic dinosaur to a franchise that is more inclusive and diverse? And I think it is a good place to start with the misogynistic legacy of the character and even the concept of the Bond girl that has some historical names that include Pussy Galore, Honey Rider, Holly Goodhead, Plenty O'Toole, and many, many more.
Are you blushing, Arthur?
You know, it's James. I have to be honest with you. You know, as you know, watching these films as a preteen, I didn't grasp the concept of James Bond as a spy. I grasped the concept as James Bond as like this international playboy.
I have to be honest. I think that was my same experience. Mine was a little bit later. I think For Your Eyes Only was the first James Bond movie that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think before seeing that movie, and I think I saw it on TV in the early 80s, but I think even being aware, even after, before seeing that movie, I was aware of James Bond in the, you know, the public cultural consciousness, you know what I'm saying? He was, and it was more so less as a spy and, to Arthur's point, more of a, you know, international globe-trotting playboy.
Mm-hmm. We're three dudes. Are we even qualified to have this discussion?
I think so. I think we're qualified to have this discussion because, yes, we are three dudes, but these films are clearly marketed toward a male audience.
But can we, you know, we can't, yes, it's marketed to men, but that has been the problem, right? The architects of this have not necessarily had the feminine perspective that they should have had. That, you know, the era as a whole, the zeitgeist as a whole for most of this franchise hasn't been interested in the feminine perspective. So,
well, to go back to what Arthur said a minute ago, I think that these films, yes, they're marketed towards men. More specifically, though, they're marketed towards white males, that white heterosexual males. That's who these films have been marketed to. To your point, though, Jay, I think that the Me Too movement, in my opinion, is not a feminist movement. It's a human movement. It's a movement that everybody needs to be involved in. And I think that it is not only, I think it's not only the role, but I think it's the responsibility for men to be having these conversations. This shouldn't just be women 100%. Having these conversations. So, yes, I would love to have a woman included in this conversation, but I think that these type of conversations are things that men should talk about amongst themselves if this movement is going to continue to move forward. It can't just be about women or women talking. It has to be men taking the responsibility of engaging in this as well. So I feel completely comfortable about us having this conversation. And I think it's important that we have this conversation.
Yeah, no, you're right, 100%.
So I think that to answer what you put out in front of us, Arthur, you know, how does this Bond era, the current Bond era, look in the Me Too generation, the Me Too movement, and then how is it going to move forward? Because this is going to be Daniel Craig's last one coming up, Bond 25. So how is this going to move forward with the new Bond? I actually think if you take some time and look at the old Bond movies, if you go back to the 60s and 70s, you do see how far these movies have come. I mean, that was some horrible shit that happened in some of those movies. I'm talking about slapping women around, the misogynistic stereotypes, the racial stereotypes. It was, you know, it really reflected those times. So as much as some of those movies are beloved, there was a lot of things that happened in those movies that when you watch them from a 2019 perspective, you cringe a little bit, or you cringe a lot. If you look at the Craig era, I really feel like they've done a much better job with their quote unquote Bond girls. Let's call them Bond women.
I don't know about that.
I didn't say a great job. I said a better job. Starting with Vesper, though. I think Vesper, from a fully fleshed out character, because that's one of the issues I think with a lot of these Bond women, is that these are very flat characters meant only for visual entertainment and for,
thoroughly, you know, disposable.
Very disposable. And they have no
plot devices, basically.
Plot devices, and there's no substance to any of these characters, to many of them. Vesper was a wild, she went in a completely different path. She's wildly divergent from a lot of the Bond women of the past. Then Quantum of Solace with Camille, one of my favorite Bond women, mm-hmm. Another fleshed out character. It was only when you got to Skyfall, when I felt like they effed up again, and they created Severine, who started out with a great background, kind of a hint at her past, and kind of made her a much more tangible character. By, you know, stating early on where she came from. She was abused as a child, and Silva found her and, you know, took her from that and, you know, made her what she was then. That's why she was so devoted to him, even though she was scared of him. And then they just effed that up by, again, turning her into a very disposable character. You know, she gets killed and nobody ever mentions her again in the entire movie. And then when you get to Spectre, you could argue that Madeline Swan character is somewhat interesting, but I found her very flat. And then of course Monica Bellucci's character is extraordinarily flat. So it seems like they were headed in a very good direction, and in the last two movies that kind of went back to the old Bond girl, you know, stereotypes. So what does that look like in the future, Arthur? To answer your question, I feel like I'm on the fence right now, because I feel like, are they going to go in this direction that they've been going in? And listen, Daniel Craig is going to be 51 or 52, mm-hmm. 51 when this movie starts filming next month. So Roger Moore was in his 50s in his last film, and his Bond girl, I think, was in her 20s. You know what I'm saying? So it was somewhat disturbing to see that huge, you know, age gap. So are we going to get, it's rumored that Madeline Swan is coming back for Bond 25. So are we going to get, and she's in her mid 30s. So not that huge of an age gap, but is she going to be the main Bond girl, or are they going to get another 20 something? Or are they going to go and do what they did do right with Spectre and Monica Bellucci, who was around the same age as Daniel Craig? I mean, it's kind of up in the air right now. What are they going to do? And with Cary Fukunaga attached to it.
But even when they had Monica Bellucci being the same age, I mean, that's a very predatorial context. Like her character in mm-hmm. the film is still preyed upon. I mean, like, he kills her husband, breaks into her house,
saves her life. Don't leave out that part.
Okay, all right.
Did save her life. All he right. didn't. But, he didn't break in that, and steal does, something.
All right. Okay. But then, you know, bang, straight away. It's there's still
that scene was utterly ridiculous. I mean, I was like, he throws down a glass, he walks towards her, and just by sheer magnetism, she can't resist him. I mean, it was just like, okay. And I think that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's what gets at not only the problem with the franchise in terms of the women, maybe the problem with the franchise in terms of some of their storytelling elements, is the fact that I feel like they sometimes rely upon the Bond tent poles, for lack of a mm-hmm. better term, instead of telling a compelling story. So we know that Bond gets all the women. We know that Bond has the gadgets. We know that Bond can't be beat, you know? And so they build these scenes around that. And I think that was a perfect scene. It was like, why did she, it was never explained why she slept with him. You know, it was just,
never.
He just basically,
on the day of her husband's funeral,
right. of her husband's funeral, he was interrogating her at the moment when he was seducing her.
Right.
It was from a visual standpoint, it was well filmed. You know, it looked beautiful, but it didn't really make sense. And again, I think that's them kind of leaning on the whole Bond gets all the women. And I don't think that's going to fly in the Me Too era. I don't think it works.
Well, look, let me, because this deals with moving forward. Do we know if Naomi Harris is going to reprise her role as Moneypenny?
Yes, she's coming back.
So she's an interesting, I dare say, balance to the equation, from the standpoint is that she is full on the most active Moneypenny, where, what is it, at the beginning of Skyfall, she's doing the op with James Bond, and she's the one that is, you know,
looking badass.
out, Yeah, she's pretty badass. You know, she's looking out for him, you know, while he's in the field. She's not just behind the desk as she has historically been.
She can make jokes while she's engaging in action, you know. She's got right. all that vibe going on, yeah.
Right.
I have beef with that, though.
She's this badass agent. Yeah, okay, she missed the shot, but it's very difficult.
You about to say what I'm going to say.
Now she's like, okay, great. Covert, field operative, could have been the new James Bond. No, I'm going to go and be a secretary. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Admin is the term you're looking for. It's not secretary anymore. It's admin.
Sorry.
Well, assistant. I mean, maybe that's how Lois Maxwell started out. Maybe she was just this badass, and then when they got around to making the movie, she was, you know,
no.
doing the secretary duty.
Yeah, I thought that was, again, that was just bad writing. I think for her to, I get with, you know, the whole thing with Bond telling her, you know, field work is not for everybody. I got that. And her making that choice that she didn't want to do field work anymore, but I'm 100% with you. It was ridiculous for her to go from field work to, even though she's basically, you know, the admin for the head of the Secret Service. It just seems like a step down. You wouldn't do that to a dude. But here's what I have. The beef though I have is that with this term badass, and I think I may have even said this on a previous show, is that I think that in our current, the cultural moment, one of the things I see a lot of men doing, especially heterosexual men who are trying to support the feminist movement or the Me Too movement. And it's a well-intentioned mistake that I think they're making, but it is a mistake in my opinion, is that they're trying to equate strong feminism with what we traditionally think of as strong masculinity. Mm-hmm, in other words, if I'm a male writer and I'm sitting down writing a screenplay and I want to put some female characters in there and I want to make it seem like I'm with the Me Too movement, I'm going to make all my female characters kick ass. You know what I'm saying? They got to be badasses. And that to me is not what this is about. To me, it's about a female character getting all the latitude that a male character gets. That's one of the reasons I like Vesper in Casino Royale. She's a fully fleshed out character. She's not a badass. She doesn't go around, you know, she doesn't pick up guns and help Bond, you know, take out cats or take out enemy agents or any of that stuff. But she does present herself as someone who she's not a chump. She doesn't fall for a lot of things that the young 007 tries to pull over on her, especially when he tries to get her to re-up the money after he lost. And she calls him out. You know, she says, this is your ego talking. This is not intelligence. This is your ego talking. So I think those type of characters. Now, Camille in Quantum of Solace, she is a quote unquote badass. She's an agent. You know, she's his opposite number. But I don't feel that every Bond woman, or even in a broader context, every woman in any type of film has to fit into these, you know, stereotypical male, you know, masculinity archetypes.
Just because somebody's a badass, it doesn't mean they're only a badass because we're trying to tick a box or fulfill a quota. I enjoyed seeing her in that role. I think she played it well. I think it suited her very well. And I think it was nice to see a woman in that role. But I don't think I agree with you. It's not simply a case of saying, right, women can do everything men do, and now women have to do everything men do. There is a difference, right?
Yeah, I think absolutely. There's a difference.
Basically, let me ask you guys this. Can Bond continue to sleep with all these women in this current age?
Right. You have to fundamentally change the character. I mean, James Bond is a super hoe. He's a super hoe. Everybody knows it. You know, Moneypenny knows it. All of that, right? To move forward with that, where all of a sudden he's just not on that, is going to be awkward unless you fundamentally change his.
That's my. It was a movement about us not sleeping with each other. That's what I'm asking you guys.
No, it's not solely about that. But in the concept of James Bond, he can't continue to chase skirts. And that's as you said, a tentpole of the character. How do you do that with a character designed not to have compassion for human life?
I think it's just about not being creepy as hell. And he is very, very often creepy as hell. You know, like even in Casino Royale, after that first killing scene where Vesper's involved and she's freaked out and she goes and sits in the shower fully clothed and he goes and sits in there with her. And, you know, the option is, all right, you're an analyst. You know, you sit behind the desk, you work for the Treasury. You're not a field operative. I get it. This is a traumatic situation for you. instead of consoling her in that way, he's like, well, let me suck your fingers.
Yeah.
It's just so like invasive and like, yo, dude, what? What? That's your choice? That's your option? I sense a chink in the armor. Let me attack. That's his vibe very, very often. It's about his needs, what he mm-hmm. wants to do. And mm-hmm. I think Quantum of Solace on the other side is a good example for at least one of the characters, for the Camille character.
I'm about
character.
To say, not for Strawberry Fields. Absolutely not for Strawberry, not for Fields, Strawberry Fields.
But for Camille, it's a good example because they don't sleep together.
But that's why I agree with everything until you said that. That's why I think the argument falls down for me. It's not about whether sex actually happens. And the lack of sex does not mean that everything is cool and everything went well. To me, it's about, okay, how did the sex go down? Now, with Strawberry Fields, he basically took advantage of his position as her superior or whatever, walks in the hotel room. Hey, why don't you come help me look for some stationery? That's creepy. I think going back to, it's interesting though, what you said about the whole Vesper thing with him in the shower with her. If I think it was in the deleted scenes or maybe it was an article I read, the first take of that, he actually, they had him suck like all five of her fingers. And they actually cut it down, I think, too, because they thought it was too creepy for him to do her whole hand. So that's it's hilarious.
Utterly ridiculous.
That they tried to decreepify it and it still came off as creepy. But I get what you,
it's just
I
such
agree
a
with your point.
Choice.
I agree with your point as far as it has to be, he has to be less, he can't be a predator anymore. So, right. But I disagree with what you said, Arthur, about he can't be sleeping with all these women anymore. As long as it's consensual sex and he's not a predator, then yes, he can be sleeping with all these women if they down for it as well. Is the solution to the problem that we want to see James Bond become asexual?
No,
but I think part of it is, you know, look, there's the message that it sends out very, very often to people is if you behave like this, then this will happen. And especially for the younger generation, with everything that's available online, there are real problems there, right? With a lot of the adult oriented stuff that's online and freely accessible, there are huge issues there with a generation of people raised to think this is how sexual contact should go. This is how it should be. And in it, you know, in all areas of media, where it relates to race, where it relates to romance, etc., we're bombarded with information. And it is incredibly persuasive if you see it over and over and over again. And what James Bond does gets replicated in 100 other movies, etc. So I think that there's nothing wrong with a character like Camille not sleeping with James Bond. There's nothing wrong with him not sleeping with the leading lady.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that we're dealing with in the Bond films specifically is that these are spies. And a lot of films and a lot of books deal with the fact that spies often use sex and sexual situations in order to mm-hmm. advance their objectives. So in that context, some of what Bond has done in the past, it makes sense in that context. Mm. But the fact is that within these movies, it's not presented in that context. It's presented as what Jay just said, that if you act this certain way, then women will just be taking off their clothes and wanting to sleep with you. And anybody impressionable who is seeing exactly. that and believing that, then we're leading into some very serious issues. But this but what's interesting is that this is not new. This has been, you know, how old is this franchise now? Going back to 1961, I think. 62 was Dr. No.
60 years old, yeah.
50, right, so this has been going on for so long that I'm trying to actually, you know, Arthur began this show talking about his first recollections of James Bond. I'm thinking of mine and thinking, okay, did that influence me to see the way Roger Moore was with, you know, behaved around women? Or did we isolate that and say, okay, that's just James Bond. He can do that because he's James Bond. So, okay, but back to the point, though, and I think, Arthur, you're about to say something, but back to that, to the point we were talking about a minute ago, fitting James Bond, the fantasy of James Bond into the reality of this era.
Right.
In my opinion, I think it's about, and I think this is what you guys are saying, I'm not sure, but I think this is what you guys are saying, but in my opinion, it's about allowing him to be the same promiscuous person that he's always been, but in a different, make sure that that's presented in a much different way than it's been presented in the past.
Yeah, I know that right now there's a very popular phrase, sex positivity, the same people would probably argue that promiscuity is not a term you want to use. You want to use the term sex positivity, and like, there's nothing wrong, and la 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 la. Whatever you think, you know, you may think differently about that. I think I do.
So okay, so let's lose just for the sake of argument, then let's use that term. You know, have him be sex positive. It's so funny to hear James Bond described as sex positive. But that actually kind of fits him now that I think about it. He's definitely positive about sex in all forms. But yeah, have him be sex positive, but that be presented in a different way than it's been presented in the past. I have to say, I just think Spectre was a huge step backwards in that category.
Because it never appears like it's an even playing field for his partners, where he has all the power and they kind of capitulate, you know, or allow him to take, rather than it's kind of mutual exchange.
Right, historically, yeah.
Sometimes quite literally, historically.
Famously, go back to the scene in Thunderball, in the beginning of Thunderball with the nurse or whatever you were, the therapist at the clinic he was at, and he basically corners her and, you know, gets her in the steam room and starts untaking. I mean, it was like, whoa, like that was criminal charges need to be pressed. You know what I'm saying? Him and Pussy Galore, the first time he gets with Pussy Galore. But to be fair, though, the last film, since we were just talking about Spectre, we have talked about Monica Bellucci, but with the Madeline Swan character, with Lea Seydoux's character, they attack each other physically at the exact same moment after Hinks is killed.
But it's always going to be how you present the character. And that's kind of where I think this is the only way to, quote unquote, fix Bond. You almost have to Dark Knight him, where you have to tell an alternate storyline. Where you have to reintroduce Tracy Bond as his wife, or Sylvia Trench as his love interest. Sylvia Trench was in the first two movies, Dr. No and From Russia With Love. You know, some sort of romantic interest, clearly defined romantic interest, to pivot against. Now, whether or not he's using sex as a tool, then okay, fine. But you know that he's got this, you know, he's got this anchor.
But what you're describing, Arthur, and what I have even hinted at a little bit, which I think is a bad idea, actually, is giving him a complete personality transplant and making him an entirely different character in all ways.
But Pierce Brosnan, Roger Moore Part 2, and Daniel Craig are completely different character types.
I think it's okay that he is not necessarily a dick, but I think it's okay that he's, look, I've got a job to do. And I can't keep worrying about the minutiae along the way. Mm-hmm. I can't worry about smashing up cars as I'm during a chase. I can't worry about people getting hurt randomly, passers by during a chase. I've got to find this guy because the stakes are much higher than any one person or any one thing. You know, I can't worry about this old Italian wife's tomatoes getting crushed. Do you remember? That's a very weird moment in that chase scene in Quantum of Solace. Like, we're supposed to really feel sorry for this Italian
camera. That was the one time that the camera slowed down. It was like during the crushing of the
poor lady and her vegetables. But he's a government assassin. He's ruthless. Mm-hmm. He's cold. You've got to be dispassionate.
He's a dick.
You've got to have a problem with your emotions, really. So is it realistic to expect someone who can kill at will and not even blink and doesn't care about the collateral damage as long as the greater good is achieved? Is it realistic for someone like that to, you know, stop and think, hang on, I've got to make sure I treat everybody with respect? And
you know what? M had a very similar conversation with him at the beginning of Casino Royale when she said to him, you know, you need to use judgment. And he looks at her and says, well, you want me to be what, half monk, half hitman? And there was a lot of great lines. It was very well written dialogue in that movie.
Well, even before that, you know, where she says, I don't know if a blunt instrument can understand.
Like you, yeah. Yeah, can understand, can make those lips. So to mash up what you guys have both said, to me, post Casino Royale James Bond looks most like, in my mind, if I were like writing this out, looks more like Timothy Dalton's James Bond. If you go back to Living Daylights, specifically, he only did two films, but if you really look at Living Daylights, Timothy Dalton is cold, ruthless. But there's and this is something no one ever talks about him. There's a level of sensitivity with him. He smiles more in that movie and laughs with Kara, his Bond girl, more than
a bit more normal.
More than Daniel Craig has, you know, smiled in any of his films. And it's more natural, to your point, Jahan, that you just said, it's more natural and it seems more human, you know, than I've seen in some of the previous films. So to me, maybe Timothy Dalton is like, you know, if this were chronological, we would take Casino Royale and after that, maybe even take Quantum of Solace, Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace. Then after that, he becomes Timothy Dalton. You know, he becomes that Living Daylights Bond. The first half of Living Daylights is essentially a Licari flick, you know, a Licari story. It's like those first 30 minutes are proper Cold War, you know. And I think that it does get into a little bit of the Bond, for lack of a better term, ridiculousness, you know, some of the more far out things. But that film, that's one of my favorite Bond flicks, Living Daylights. It would have been interesting to see him do, you know, three or four more films.
One thing I will miss about the Craig era is that Judi Dench will no longer, her M character dies, and now it's assumed by Ralph Fiennes. But I'm saying, you know, there was this maternalistic instinct that she had for Bond. She cared about Bond, and in turn, Bond cared about her.
I do like that maternal relationship that she had with Bond, and she had it with Pierce's Bond, to, you know, after GoldenEye, not in GoldenEye, but maybe in Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough. Then she let him get tortured and Die Another Day. But that's another story. But I think that her character, to me, she and Bernard Lee are the best M's to me. Mm-hmm. Because nobody like just got in Bond shit like those two. You know, she broke him down in GoldenEye. She's the one that called him a misogynistic dinosaur. She broke in Tomorrow Never Dies. One of the best lines of the whole series is when that admiral says to her, you know, M, sometimes I think you don't have the balls to do this job. And she looks at him and says, well, maybe, but the advantage is that I don't have to think with him all the time. That shit was like, fuck, come on, man. Come on. That's one of the Slam best dunk. Lines of the whole series. Then when in Quantum of Solace, again, to go back to Quantum, when she basically tells Bond that she can't trust him anymore because he doesn't know who to trust, at the hotel suite, she breaks him down there, you know. Then she pulls him in the bedroom to look at Strawberry Fields, or she points him to the bedroom, and then she says, you know, how did this happen? And he said, well, oh, it's just misdirection. She says, I know it's misdirection. I'm paraphrasing, but she says, I know it's misdirection. They look at all these women that you sleep with. They do whatever you want. Now, how many have you gotten killed? How many is this? That was a deep moment. Yeah,
deep moment, but to be fair as well, how did this happen? Well, you sent a completely inexperienced agent into, you know, to look after James Bond. It's like, shouldn't she have sent like some badass field operative as well?
Well, to be fair, time was a problem. There's only so much time. There's only so many agents in that field office. So she sent somebody basically to escort him back to the airport the next day. That was all she's supposed to do. But I get what you're saying. All right. So I think one thing to kind of get us back to what we were talking about before, you guys, I think, Arthur, you mentioned a minute ago asking about, you know, appealing to the core audience. So we know that these films, just like the Marvel films, they cannot depend upon just the core audience, just their diehard fans. They have to appeal towards the mainstream. And so every generation of Bond introduces a new Bond that checks these boxes. You know, has the cars, the women, the gadgets, the dialogue with Q and Moneypenny, and, you know, travels around the world. So we can take a new Bond, fit them into that, check those boxes, and start this whole thing anew. So and it's interesting because I hear people saying, you know, there's rumors about, you know, are they going to do Mission Impossible? Are they going to, you know, when Tom Cruise is done, are they going to put a new guy in there and do what they've done with the Bond franchise, which I don't think they can do. For the same reason it didn't work with the Bourne thing, because there's not as many boxes to check. You know, there's not those tent poles like there are in the Bond franchise or with Batman. But anyway, my point is that can we put somebody else new in that role after Bond 25 and find a way to check those boxes, but also find a way to make to transform those boxes or to evolve those boxes so they fit within this era? And it sounds like to me what you guys are saying is that in the context of Me Too, and we haven't really even touched on diversity yet, quote unquote diversity yet, but in the context of Me Too, it sounds like what we're saying is, yes, we can slide somebody into the James Bond box, but we are going to have to evolve and change those boxes. And right. that will make sure that it continues to appeal towards millennials and Generation Z and whoever else comes after them. Is that what you guys are saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that we have to build on that. I think the only way to move the franchise forward is if it grows with the audience, because the millennials are going to be 30 pretty soon. You know, I don't know age bracket wise what the Bond audience is, but I'll go so far as to assume that it's the 25 to 45 age bracket. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to grow with that audience. So the character's going to have to evolve with that audience. And there are things in Bond's past that you can mine, remine, even in a cyclical way to be able to do that.
I think they have to decide what they want the franchise to be and to commit to that. And I feel that where the Craig films have suffered most is in that lack of commitment, or what I perceive to be a lack of commitment, because they can't seem to decide whether they want it to be Bourne, jump cuts, quick edits all the way, lots of Bourne-esque action sequences, lots of brutal fights, a lot of ruthlessness and cold-heartedness, or whether they want him to be kind of emotional and struggling with issues and etc. Not that you can't do both, but I don't think that they've married those two aspects well at all. Certainly not in the last two Bond films, Skyfall and Spectre.
I think they did that best in... Well, let me say this. My favorite movie of the Craig era is Quantum of Solace. But if I'm being objective, the best movie is Casino Royale. And I think that they made a very strong decision with Casino Royale. It was definitely, to your point, Jay, it was definitely a reaction to the Bourne trilogy, in terms of this was the first time we had, you know, all the Bonds previously had been capable of fighting and, you know, more than capable of handling themselves. And in Timothy Dalton's case, even though he was a small guy, he looked very dangerous. Like, Timothy Dalton was, to me, the most intimidating of all the Bonds, just because he looked like that type of dude who might do some crazy shit. Like, you...
Focused.
Right. It's like, if you run up on him, you know what I'm saying?
He's ready.
You might regret that. He just had that look about him, you know. But Daniel Craig was hands down the most physical, you know. I think him and George Lazenby are the, as far as body types, have the best bodies, you know, as far as they look like strong men, like they could fuck something up, basically. And with Casino Royale, it was very, you know, obvious from the get-go that this was a Bond that is like, okay, if he had to go up against Jason Bourne, that's going to be a fight.
Whereas, right, because he was hand-to-hand all the way.
Right, whereas if Pierce Brosnan went up against Jason Bourne, that's an ass whooping. You know what I'm saying? Jason right. going to whoop right. that ass. So this was a reaction, but I think they did a really good job of balancing that with a Bond-esque appeal, because there's so much in Casino Royale you would never see in a Jason Bourne film, starting with that opening, the pre-title sequence, the black and white brilliant pre-title sequence that introduced Daniel Craig when he assassinates that section chief. And then the whole thing with Vesper, all those things, they made decisions, to John's point, and they didn't, I feel like going forward from there, they didn't make strong decisions, and that culminated in the bad decision of Spectre.
But still, that black and white sequence, I agree, it was incredibly entertaining, and it was a really good way to reboot it. And they went a bit heavy on the black and white. Like, they had the black and white scene, which is all polished, and then they had a black and white scene within the black and white scene that's like super grainy, to say, okay, this is older black and white. This is an older...
I dug that.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't old. It was like, this is what happened in the past.
But you know, I dug it too. But what I didn't dig is that after that first kill in the bathroom, so he kills the bad guy's henchman first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the bathroom, and it's, you know, it's a brutal scene, and he has to drown the guy in a public bathroom sink. So like a really super shallow sink, and somehow he manages to drown him in like 10 seconds. But it's a brutal scene. A lot of fighting, a lot of broken toilet equipment, etc. And then after that, you can see him sort of struggling. You can see him being like, oh my God, I just killed a human being. What, you know, it's my first kill. I've just ended a life. I don't know how to deal with this. And then in the second black and white scene, which is ostensibly an hour later, he's in the real bad guy's office. And it's like the second kill, yeah, don't worry about it, bang. shoots it, no compunction at all. So much so that we see the guy's brains basically splatter on a photo of his wife and kids. And it's like, yeah, whatever. No problem.
I think this is where the deleted scenes come in handy, because that scene was actually a lot longer as it was filmed. It actually showed Bond tracking that guy, the henchman. It showed him tracking him. So there was some time between that and, you know, his killing of the section chief. But I get your point. I do like how they wrote it into the actual story, where the section chief tells him, you know, well, don't worry, your second time will be, and he kills him. He says, yeah, considerably.
I dig all that. I just think that, like, they were so keen to be like, yeah, he has no conscience after that. First kill, massive conscience. Second kill, zero. Yeah.
But to the point, I think, though, I agree with John as far as they have to make a decision what they're going to do. I'm going to say it. I just think Spectre was introduced in the last film. The first time Spectre was in an Eon film, I think, since You Only Live Twice. There's all that legal. They had a bunch of legal issues. They couldn't get rights back to Spectre until the Spectre 2015 film. So Quantum was, you know, introduced in Casino Royale, not by name, but by Mr. White showing up in Casino Royale,
right?
Because they didn't have Spectre, so they had to create a new organization. One of the biggest mistakes of the Craig era, in my opinion, was that instead of continuing on with Quantum, they got the rights back to Spectre. So it was like, okay, fuck Quantum. Quantum is now a subsidiary of Spectre. So Spectre is the big baddie. And I think that was a huge mistake, because Quantum was cool. Quantum was a 2008, 2009 version of Spectre. In other words, it wasn't about, you know, some guy in a big bass stroking a cat with all these nameless, faceless henchmen around him. It was real people from all different walks of life who existed in secret, to the point where they didn't have a bass. They met at an opera. You know, that's how they met, and that's where they would have these conversations. That was dope.
On Bluetooth. A bit ridiculous. Like, how are they going to hear each other over Tosca blaring out? But yeah, I mean,
suspension of disbelief. Suspension of disbelief. So I think though,
best Bluetooth reception on the planet.
that's that quantum Bluetooth, baby. That's that new shit. So I think though the error that the Broccoli's made, with the production of this movie and going back to Spectre, was that they were trying to please those diehard fans who want to see, you know, the cat being stroked. They want to see the big bass. They want to see these henchmen. They want to see, and it's like, dude, that's 1960s, 70s Bond. Yeah. That's done. You know, you can't. It doesn't look right. It doesn't fit in this modern age. This whole, you know, kind of war between that they've presented inside of Bond, and I think it's done much better in the books. But from what I remember from the books, but on film, this war between his coldness and his humanity has been, to me, kind of handled clumsily for a long time. If you look back, I think it was in GoldenEye, there's a scene where Bond and I forgot her name, the main Bond chicken there, the Russian, they're sitting on a beach, and she all of a sudden, just out of the blue, like out of nowhere, starts questioning him about his humanity and the fact that he can't keep doing this and being, she just met this cat, you know what I'm saying? And she's just going off on him. And it was very awkward. And he's just like, this is how I am. This is how I have to be. And it was so, like, you could tell that they really shoved that in there. And then the same thing happens in Spectre. Daniel Craig and Lea Seydoux are having the same conversation. She's like, how can you be like this? You know, how can you? She said, it sounds lonely. You know, he's like, that's just the way I am. I feel like they've had this kind of, you know, they've tried to present this part of him. And again, I think Casino Royale was the best to me, the best presentation of that inner tug of war. But to John's point, if you're going to go forward with that story, you have to really commit to that. You can't just keep shoving in here little piecemeal things. You have to actually really commit to that story.
So a little side promotion before we continue. I'd like to remind you all to check out our previous episode, The Denzel Effect, the second episode in our new seasonal format, where we do discuss some controversy surrounding a black James Bond, namely Idris Elba. The episode, like all of our library, is available in iTunes as well as Stitcher, Spotify, and everywhere that fine podcasts are distributed. And our sister podcast, The Music Snobs. Most recent episode is devoted to someone I'm sure was in James Bond's playlist, Frank Sinatra. So, who's the next Bond going to be? Leading, odds leading are Richard Madden from Game of Thrones.
Oh, from The Bodyguard, right?
Rob Stark. Yeah.
Bodyguard being a BBC TV show that you Americans should go and watch, man. It's a lot of fun, you know.
It's gotten a lot of love over here. It's on Netflix still.
Yeah,
has it really?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's gotten a lot of love here.
Good.
Let me say this though. I do think that Richard Madden could pull off the what we've been talking about, a kinder, gentler Bond, for lack of a better word,
non-predatory Bond.
Yeah, I mean someone that is I guess a little more sympathetic to the human condition, even though he's supposed to be devoid of all respect for the human condition in order to get his assignment completed.
Let me ask you something about him as Americans. Did you have a problem with his accent? Could you understand him? Like he's from...
No, you all sound alike to us.
No, it's all sound... Yeah.
Sound alike to us. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. As long as it sounds different from us, we're willing to.
Anything that sounds like...
We bought Lazenby.
Anything that's got like, you know, mate... If you know, ending a sentence with a question, anything like that, we're good.
Just say sorry a lot.
All right, cool.
Look, we've offended them. We've offended them, Arthur. and our bloody entire Americans. UK audience.
all five of us.
So I think, though, after Bond 25, there may be some major changes here. There's been rumors that, you know, the Broccoli's may end up selling Eon, or maybe, you know, looking for another corporation to handle the production of these films. So there may be some major changes after this. Bond 25 may be the last, you know, traditional Bond movie we get. So who knows what could happen. I think, though, moving forward, we talked about a little while ago, we talked about appealing to the next generations of fans and whether or not they're going to be interested in James Bond. I think that, you know, you can't understate what Daniel Craig, what those films have done for this franchise, because you look at where it ended. And I like Pierce Brosnan. I really like Goldeneye. I like Tomorrow Never Dies. I somewhat liked World Is Not Enough. I didn't like Die Another Day in retrospect. But if you look at where Die Another Day ended, even though it performed very well at the box office, it left Bond in a very cartoony caricature kind of place. It was very much like, where are we going to go from here? We just had dude in an invisible car floating on a wave, you know, it was on ice, the shit was ridiculous. So where do we go from there? So you can't really understate what the Daniel Craig era,
they're definitely not jokey films.
Yeah. Anymore. And he's basically reinserted this character back into the cultural conversation and made it cool again. You know, Bond is cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where are they going to go from there? I think that they have to start looking at how are they going to appeal to, you know, all these other generations. There used to be James Bond, young James Bond cartoon, I believe. I think that was in the 60s or 70s. Comic books, you know, but there used to be all these different types of collateral out there to make sure that James Bond wasn't just regulated to these films. And now I think all we have is the films. We have a book, a novel that comes out every once in a while. I think the latest one, Forever and a Day, Anthony Horowitz's novel came out maybe about... I think it came out in the fall of last year. But outside of that, I think they're going to have to do more. There is a comic book that I see on the shelves every once in a while, but I think that they're going to have to do more to appeal to a broader audience. They're going against, you know, the Marvel universe, the DC universe, Star Wars. And James Bond is the oldest one of all. I mean, he's been around for 60 years.
And also not just oldest one in terms of character history, but oldest one in terms of actor representation. That's a really, really good point, Isaac. It terrifies me that Eon, the company that produces the James Bond films, might be sold to somebody like Disney.
Oh, yeah. Could happen.
I mean, that would be terrible, because what I think, you know, whoever takes over the mantle from Daniel Craig, they should be a grown man or a grown woman. What I absolutely, positively do not want to see is a 25-year-old running around.
I can see that happening with Disney.
To answer your question about how do they make them more quote-unquote relevant to a younger generation, that, of course, is the no-brainer, easy, lazy way to do it. I absolutely don't want to see that. I don't want to... You know, when I was growing up, you know, you had all the leading stars were adults. They weren't kids. And increasingly in movies now, we're looking at people in their late 20s, early 20s. It doesn't really leave any kind of character identification for those in their, you know, those of us in our 30s and 40s, etc.
The only hope I would say that you have that of that not happening is that, and I agree with you, so many of the young, you know, the heroes are presented as being extraordinarily young, but the biggest heroes at the box office are surprisingly getting either, they're either middle-aged or they're close to getting middle-aged. Look at The Rock, middle-aged. Look at Tony Stark.
Yeah.
You know, middle age.
Yeah.
Even mm-hmm. Captain mm-hmm. America, Chris, what's his name? Plays Captain America. Yeah. He's in his Chris late thirties. You know,
Chris Evans.
So, Hemsworth, who plays Thor, is in his mid thirties. So, I think there is some.
You know, contrast it to like the '50s, where the cats had gray hair. Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's never happening again. That's never happening again. But to your point, though, you know what I would like to see, though, as far as taking James Bond and putting it in multiple genres, I would like to see them put a lot more energy into the comic books, put, you know, do a young television show if they want to do somebody young, do a young television show with a young James Bond like they used to have. I would also like to see them do what they did with Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is in the public domain, so I guess anybody can do anything. But did you see the 2014 flick, I think it was, Mr. Holmes with Ian McKellen as Sherlock Holmes? Love that movie. Yeah. I would love to see Pierce Brosnan as, you know, Pierce has got to be, I think, is in his 60s now. I would love to see him play the older James Bond, not doing what he did, what he did as a young James Bond, but I'm saying almost as a more George Smiley type character. You know, it's like he can't do all this jumping over, you know, rooftops and shit like that, but he can still be James Bond and have to be called out of retirement to, you know, for some, maybe Blofeld did something, you know, it's like only he can go
or,
after
or
him.
Even, or even, you know, at some point he has to retire his field operative role and transition, you know, into a desk job somewhere, an analyst role somewhere.
Yeah, and he's struggling with that. So the movie is about him struggling with that, and then he leaves and does some crazy shit. You know, all these things can exist at the same time. So it doesn't have to be, okay, we're going to do that movie. We're not going to do any of the, you know, 35, 40-year-old James Bond movie. No, we can do that too. I think that Eon or whoever takes this over, it has to be more. Because, dude, look at how many movies we've only, it's 2019. Casino Royale came out in 2006. So in 13 years, we've gotten 4 movies. That's horrible.
No, but okay, but wait.
That's Devil's horrible. Advocate. Look at how many movies, dude. Sean Connery, they're kicking them out every year.
Roger Moore films were coming out like every 2-3 years.
I get that, but nowadays, isn't the wait useful to them? James Bond, when it comes out, is still a special thing, because they are so few and far between. There isn't the universe, there aren't the spin-offs. Contrast that with Star Wars, for example, and look at how Solo has not performed well, because now Star Wars films are not special. There's 2 a year or whatever. And it's now become, there's almost now an exhaustion. With the increasing frequency, you are seeing diminished returns. And I think for Bond to perhaps start splashing out and saturating the market might not be wise. And I think you might lead to it, people getting too used to it. Right now, because they're so few and far between, and they're also different to everything else out there in that the lead character is not American, with the exception of perhaps Mission Impossible, they all have a much more international focus in terms of their settings and their plots, etc. It is a special thing that you start to look forward to. You know, we're doing the podcast because of it. What's Bond 25 going to be, etc. There's a lot more mystique around it. I think that more is not necessarily more over here.
Well, okay, and to your point, these films, international quality, British lead, you know, they're more akin to like Harry Potter films that came out every few years, and they're distinctly tied to books that are, you know, a complete international phenomenon. But that being said, these last few Bond films have felt delayed. They felt like there have been problems. Yeah. So it's like every time a Bond comes out, you've got to spend a lot of energy just to promote. You have to pre-promote the films.
To reinsert it back into the fact
that the films are coming. And then you got to promote that they're actually coming. And then you got to promote them when they're out. And as opposed to them coming out with some frequency and still be successful, which I think they could be, similar to how the Harry franchise films, even though they didn't come out once a year, once every other, every third year, still had that trajectory and built on that trajectory.
Yeah, I think every 3 years, because I think there's a difference between being delayed, like Arthur, I think that's a good word, delayed versus building up, like what Jahan's talking about, building up that anticipation. And 5 years is too long. I think that 3 years is probably the mark you want to hit. The Mission Impossible, one of you brought up Mission Impossible a minute ago. Those films come out every 3 years. And the last three films just gotten, you know, more and more money at the box office. So I get what you're saying, Jay, but I think that if you're putting out different types of property at the same time under the same intellectual property, but different types of stories, I think as long as those stories are good and they differ in tone, for example, if you did an old man, Pierce Brosnan, James Bond, and it came out, you know, in 2019, and then the Daniel Craig joint comes out in 2020, I don't think you're gonna have any problem with that as long as they are very different in tone. And it's, you know, you're gonna get a different audience for each one of those things. But I think five years is too long in between films, especially for a character who's been around for 60 years. And especially when your star, he was 45, now he's 50. That's a big jump, you know, and it's like, that's gonna show on screen.
Of course it is. And he made comments about he'd rather slit his wrists than do another Bond movie, etc.
You know what? I take umbrage. I hate that. I hate when people say that, but I'm going to say it. I take umbrage.
I quite like that. I'm going to start using that. I quite like that.
When people bring that up, because that was like one comment he made on a press junket. And it just like became like, oh, that's
during,
how he feels.
During contract negotiations as well, right?
Right. And that's during like how he, it's like, raise your hand if you've never said anything that you regretted saying later because you lost your shit for a second. Yeah.
Of course. But going back to the point, this is not a realistic approach. No company is going to follow what we have suggested here. I cannot see a commercial company buying Bond, deciding to do something. They're only going to buy it if it makes them money. They're not going to buy it as a prestige property. You know that the most likely scenario, if a universe of James Bond is created, for it to just be more of the same all over the place.
Yeah, and that would be a shame.
That will be a shame, and it will also be the end of the series because you will then get the exhaustion. It's going to happen with Star Wars. It's going to happen with the Marvel movies, that there is...
I don't know. And
people
that's
will get tired of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's to me the difference. You know, and not to make this a Marvel Star Wars conversation, but I think that's the difference, is the fact that what they're doing with the Marvel franchise and the reason that people are not getting tired of it after 10, 11 years now, and it's only getting more popular, is because of the diversity and tone of those movies. I know that you and a lot of other people who don't really like superhero movies feel, oh, all these movies are the same. They're not. Sure. They're very tonally different. And I think they appeal to different people. Everybody who saw Ant-Man, you know, or I should say everybody who saw Black Panther didn't see Ant-Man. You know, it's like it's a completely different crowd. Sure. So I think that if I were at Disney or whoever and thinking about buying Eon, if I bought Eon, it wouldn't be about creating a James Bond universe so much as it would be about creating a James Bond franchise that inserts him to what Arthur said a minute ago, inserts him a little bit more into the public consciousness and not so much relying upon a movie that comes out every 5 years. That's not appealing. And I don't think it's sustainable. I think that the Daniel Craig era, again, you can't understate what he did for this franchise. I don't think you can expect that to happen again and say, okay, we're just going to release a movie every 5 years and we'll be straight. I think the next person who takes over this role is going to have to work harder at achieving or getting close to achieving what Skyfall did, or what Casino Royale did, as far as at the box office. It's going to be an uphill battle. It'll be interesting, but I'm a little trepidatious, just like you guys are. I don't want to see this franchise Disney-fied. But at the same time, if they're fortunate enough to get a Kevin Feige, somebody like that at the helm of this and really understands this property and knows how to flip it, that would be exciting. because the Broccolis may be out of ideas. You know, they may be done. They may be like, we don't really know what to do with this. I think maybe if I feel like we should be consulting at this point, but I feel like maybe if a Disney did buy them, their Kevin Feige needs to be, you know, a Brit. You know, he needs to be yeah. and they need to base this at Pinewood. You know, their base needs to be over there. It doesn't need to be in Atlanta. It needs to be at Pinewood. It could be Disney. It could be a Japanese corporation. It could be an Asian corporation. You know, it could be Sony or somebody that buys them. It's going to be interesting, man. But yeah, this Bond 25, look, we got Cary Fukunaga at the helm, who was, nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw him being chosen as the director after old boy left.
Because really, in terms of his filmography, really the two biggest things he's done have been True Detective Season 1 and
Beast of No Nation.
Maniac for Netflix.
Or Beast of No Nation. For Netflix.
Beast of No Nation for Netflix as well, yeah.
I feel like he got the job based on that segment in True Detective, that one shot, you know.
That one camera, yeah.
And I like Cary Fukunaga, and I'm just interested in seeing how, you know, his take and how they're going to go, and this being Craig's last film, and I'm fairly certain that Craig doesn't want to go out on Spectre, even though it was financially successful. It was, you know, got a lot. That's not what you want to go out on. So, it would be very interesting to me. I'm very interested in seeing what they come up with.
Which Cary Fukunaga is going to show up though, because he's a man of diverse talents, and he, you know, Maniac is distinctly different from Beast of No Nation, which is distinctly different from True Detective. Even, you know, forget the script, forget the storyline, stylistically, you know, filmographically, very, very different.
Well, after this film comes out, we may say that this Bond film is very different from Maniac, which is very different. We might just add it to the list.
This has been Snobs on Film. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode. Our full library can be found in anywhere and everywhere that fine podcast feeds are distributed, including iTunes, where we invite you to leave a comment and please rate the show. We never tell you to worry about how many stars you should give us, so much as if you hit the last one on the right, you'll cover everything. We're also on Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast. Again, anywhere and everywhere fine podcasts are distributed. You can find us also online at snobsonfilm.com. Our Twitter handle is snobsonfilm, and our Instagram handle is, wait for it, snobsonfilm. My name is Arthur, your host, joined as always with Jahan and Isaac. We'll see you next show.
Dude, that's not the plot I have a problem with. Skyfall is a ridiculous plot. Skyfall and Spectre are the most ridiculous plots. Skyfall okay. just
Can I just give a shout out to the inhaler and the use yes. of the inhaler by Lashif?
Give the inhaler like, every a shout time, out, please.
Like every time he's got this problem, it's just, you know, he just takes a little puff and just keeps it moving. Now, you know, I have some experience with people. And, you know, in their inhaler, that's, and when they take a puff, they need a few minutes to kind of let it sink in, and you know, they just can't. It's
you motherfuckers, listen. It's, do you want to be sitting in the movie theater and have to watch some dude get the hit from his inhaler, or do you want to just move on to the next scene? Hey, yo, so don't you ever let no one tell you to grow up and give up on your dreams.